Welcome to Face the Nation. I'm Leslie Stahl, reporting from New Hampshire, where the state motto is live free or die. For the 8 Democrats running in the primary here, the motto is do well or drop out. Can Senator Gary Hart improve on his 16% second place showing in Iowa? We'll ask the candidate himself. Can Senator Alan Cranston, who came in fourth in Iowa, do well enough here to survive? We'll ask him. An issue facing the nation.
From CBS News, Washington, Face the Nation, with White House correspondent Leslie Stahl. Campaign 84 is on the road, and the next stop is the New Hampshire primary this Tuesday. Correspondent Reed Collins will anchor the CBS News radio coverage. Christopher Glenn will report late developments, and other correspondents will keep you up to the minute from the candidates' headquarters. You'll hear frequent reports throughout the evening. Listen for CBS News coverage of the New Hampshire primary this Tuesday on most of the CBS radio network stations. It's something special.
I beg your pardon? What's that written on that big stone tablet you're trying to move?
Oh, it's ideas about epilepsy. They're positively ancient.
It says people with epilepsy are different, aren't they?
No, people with epilepsy act like everyone else. The only thing strange about epilepsy is the ideas people have.
Epilepsy. Find out where we are today. Write Epilepsy Foundation of America, Washington, D.C., 20013.
You just cannot understand George McGovern until you appreciate the fact that he's gotten himself elected 4 times statewide in one of the most conservative states in the Union.
Campaign manager for George McGovern in 1972. Elected United States Senator from Colorado in 1974.
Gary Hart running for president. Good luck. See you. Thank you.
Candidate for president in 1984.
With me now in New Hampshire is Senator Gary Hart. Senator, polls this morning show that you're surging here in New Hampshire in the primary. Do you think there's any chance you could win the New Hampshire primary?
Well, there are always chances for miracles, and I believe in those, or I wouldn't be here today. I think I eventually will win some primaries, and I think it will be fairly soon. This may or may not be the first.
You think you have a chance? What's winning in the New Hampshire primary? Sometimes people come in second and they win.
Well, given some of the expectations about my campaign in 1983, I think just physically being here is a victory. I think we're going to do very well. I believe we'll come in second. It's we're competing with Senator Glenn, of course, who's much better known and has much more money, but I think we're going to do very well.
Well, let's say you do very well. There's all sorts of talk about an organizational problem, that you have not managed to get your delegate slates in order for some of the states coming up that you need to do well in to keep your campaign alive. Does it all fall apart after here? How can you put it together if you don't have delegate slates?
Well, all of that talk that you're referring to is coming from the front runner's campaign, and I think that's to be expected. The fact of the matter is, with the exception of 2 particular states, we are qualified for 95% of the delegates in this country, and in those 2 states, I think I will do very well and get my share of the delegates. So the tactics of politics, I think, are being used by my principal opponent to suggest that even if I have a message that I can't get this nomination, and that's just frankly not the case.
Well, I don't think the talk is just coming from your opponent. I think that a lot of reporters covering this campaign wonder how you, who had been the organizational genius in the McGovern campaign, have managed to sort of not put the organizational side of this together. In New York, your delegates are being challenged, your petitions are. In Pennsylvania,
No organizational genius can prevent your opponents from challenging your delegates. That's purely a tactical ploy.
But you only filed 15,000. Jesse Jackson filed 4 times that.
All we need is 10,000. I will qualify for all the delegates in New York, and I will win that primary. In any case, I am not going to be prevented from getting this nomination by these kinds of tactical considerations. I did learn a lot in 1972, and I think I've applied that to this race, or I wouldn't be here today in a better-than-expected position. I will win this nomination.
You're absolutely convinced?
I'm absolutely sure.
What about a report this morning that Congressman Udall has gone to George McGovern and asked him to pull out of the race and sort of sway his support over to you. Are you behind this?
No, I'm not, and I'm frankly surprised by that. It's very kind if it is, in fact, the case of Congressman Udall to do that. Each candidate has to make his own decision as to what his future is, and that includes Senator McGovern, and I will just wait to see what those decisions are.
But if he pulls out at some point because he's not doing well, do you would you ask him to ask his supporters to throw their weight to you? Can you pick up his delegates, for example?
Well, there are, in many of the states that I've mentioned, delegates are either filed as independents or uncommitted or for some other candidate who will not be a factor, and many of those delegates will come in our direction.
Okay, enough with this nuts and bolts. This morning, there's shelling. The American ships off the coast of Lebanon are shelling this morning. The Marines are out of Beirut. What do you think the shelling means, and what about our policy over there right now?
Lebanon has turned into Ronald Reagan's Iran. The hostage crisis in Iran hurt Jimmy Carter very badly. I think the failure of any kind of policy in Lebanon and the spasm of destruction that this country is wrecking on the people of that country is outside the mainstream of our character. It is totally out of keeping with what this country stands for. And I think not only the Lebanese people and other people of the world, but the people of this country have a right to be outraged at their president, who just fires off shells in any direction in order to satisfy some whim of his own.
How serious do you think the situation in Lebanon is for American prestige in the Middle East? The president said Lebanon was of our own national security importance. It was central.
Well, I think a secure and stable Lebanon is very important to this country's future, as it affects the other countries of the region, particularly the long-term security and survival of Israel. But this president went at that goal absolutely in the wrong manner, as he is in Central America and elsewhere. We cannot achieve military victories in these countries fraught with long-term civil disruption and war. And the failure of the Reagan policy is the belief that we can militarize our foreign policy and achieve our objectives by 1,500 Marines who are sent there as hostages.
Let me change the subject back here to the New Hampshire primary. And one of your targets in this state is women. You expect to get the women's vote. Are you ready to promise and pledge that you would choose a woman as your vice president?
No, I'm not, nor am I ready to promise or pledge that I will not. What I have said throughout is that...
That's bold.
Well, what I'm saying is that the options are all open. I'm looking for the best qualified person, regardless of race or gender, to govern this country if I, as president, am unable to do that. And there are many qualified women, and I will take them into serious consideration.
Well, let me ask you about your cabinet. You think that you've said that women should be more involved in government and be in positions of power. Are you ready to pledge that you will appoint 50% of your cabinet to women?
I'm ready to pledge not only in terms of vice president and cabinet and Supreme Court and heads of bureaus and agencies and ambassadors that the qualified people of this country, including women who have not had their share in the political process, will not only be considered but be appointed.
50% of your cabinet?
I'm not going to set any quotas, but some rough approximation of what the makeup of this society is.
Well, you won't make any promises about putting women into positions such as Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense, the positions that never go to women in this country.
No, I have just, in fact, said just the opposite. What I said was I'm going to give serious consideration putting women into every spot, including the Supreme Court.
But you won't say you will.
Well, I am not running a campaign of promises, unlike other candidates. And I think what the American people are fed up with is people saying, elect me and I will do this and I will do that and I will do that. I think women will look at my record and support my campaign based upon that record.
There's a mini issue that seems to be bubbling up a little bit under the surface around your campaign. And that is the question about you changing your name from Hart Pence to Hart right after you finished college. I know a lot of Americans change their name. I think it's kind of almost an American thing to do. And it really, you know, there's no stigma to it. But why did you change your name?
Well, first of all, it was a decision that my parents as well as my wife and I made collectively, and it was to restore our name to what it originally was some long time ago. Various elements of our family have done that off and on over the years, and it was a collective decision on all of our parts.
Your uncle, Ralph Hart Pence, told George Lardner, a Washington Post reporter, that you came to him and said that you wanted to do it because you wanted to get into politics.
No, I don't want to get into a quarrel with my uncle, but that is not the case.
You did not change your name because you knew when you were that you wanted to run for president.
No, that's correct.
And also, there's a question about your age. It seems that you say that you are 1 year younger than your birth record.
No, I am exactly the same age as my birth record, which is 1936.
1936. There's no discrepancy between what you have said your age is and what it in fact...
I think that's the case, yes.
There's never been a discrepancy. Your biographies do not make
well,
you
I, no, I can't account for every piece of paper that's been written by my campaign or anyone else, but I've never disputed, I can't recall disputing what my correct age is.
I also would like to ask you about Jesse Jackson. There is a controversy around his campaign about his having told reporters or used anti-Semitic slurs in interviews with reporters. And I'm curious as to why none of the other candidates have spoken out against this. I mean, if Jim Watt used derogatory statements, everybody spoke out against him. Why aren't you and why aren't the others speaking out against
Jesse
Jackson?
Well, I will speak out against it if it's in fact demonstrated or proved that Reverend Jackson in fact made those statements. So long as he is disagreeing that the statements are made, I don't think any of us should jump into that and accuse him of anything. If he or anyone else, including myself, is guilty of anti-Semitism, I think that's outrageous.
But you're not willing to go directly against him at this point?
Well, he says he didn't say it, and I don't know what role
really.
I can play in there.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't really deny it.
Well, that's news to me. I thought he did.
Uh-huh. Okay. Your campaign is saying that you are represent the new generation. And yet Mondale is only 8 years younger than you are. You were both born in the 30s. What do you mean, a new generation?
I think it has much less to do with chronological age and a lot more to do with political age. How long we've been in office, how beholden we are to old arrangements and old agendas and old commitments and old programs and old policies. Quite often a party in a country has to jump a generation of leaders, that is to say, leave past leaders and past arrangements and agendas behind, and move forward with new ideas and new proposals for that nation, and that's what I'm trying to do.
And do you think that this is the major reason that you are coming up in the polls, that the public is in fact rejecting the old ideas, which are Walter Mondale's old ideas?
Well, I have said throughout that I thought this race would get down to a competition between Vice President Mondale and myself, between the future and the past of our party. And that's why I've been stressing so much the need of our party to put forward a new vision for this country's future, economically, militarily, in terms of our defense, arms control, and the rest. And that's what this candidacy represents, and I think people are responding to it.
Do you think people really do know what your new ideas are, though? Do you think there's some confusion out there as to what they are?
Oh, I'm sure. I've spelled them out in speeches and books and so on. If you'll recall, back in 1983, many commentators on this race said, Senator Hart has no chance because he's the candidate of ideas, as if that were some bad thing. I thought that's what politics was all about.
No,
I think that
it's hard
I think
to understand because it doesn't fit a slogan the way Reagan's did. Let's get the government reduced. I mean, you can't boil your ideas down into something the public readily grasps.
Well, I've been doing that, I think, in the themes of this campaign in the last few weeks, and I think that's why in Iowa and New Hampshire we're doing very well and we'll do even better as time goes on.
Well, we don't have a lot of time left, but can you give us in broad brush strokes, the sort of general theme of your new ideas?
Well, first in the economy, unlike other candidates in this race who talk about restoring policies of the past, I've outlined an economic strategy which, first of all, rebuilds and modernizes this country's industrial base. Second, rebuilds our infrastructure and puts people to work. And third, commits this country to world leadership in trade and technology throughout the 1980s and 90s.
And that's the general
that's
new
as,
idea.
That's as encapsulated as I can get it.
Thank you very much,
Thank
Senator
you.
Hart. We'll be back with Senator Alan Cranston and Dan Rather.
Heard the latest? The big news right now could be out of Central America or Wall Street, Tokyo, Washington, or Los Angeles. But wherever the story breaks, CBS News brings it to you expertly, clearly, and quickly. Thanks to the best reporting staff in broadcasting. People like Charles Osgood, Susan Spencer, Bob Schieffer, and their colleagues. Don't miss CBS News Hourly. We stay on top of the news, so you stay on top of the news. It's something special.
I was a waiter for 37 years, met a lot of famous people, had a few good meals in the bargain. But I couldn't wait until I retired so I could stop waiting. And what's the first thing I've got to do? Wait at home for my government check. So I signed up for direct deposit. Now my Social Security checks are deposited automatically. And I have time to do what I like. Waiter, may I have a new fork?
Ask for direct deposit wherever you have a checking or savings account. A public service of the U.S. Treasury.
Oh, I didn't even have time to put on a robe. This young man from the Red Cross gave me his coat to wear. It was miles too big. There he was, this big Red Cross fellow, putting his coat around my shoulders. And I was laughing and crying at the same time. I don't know what we would have done.
One of the Red Cross ladies finally found Susan's teddy bear under a pile of blankets. From that minute on, she was Susie's hero. I'll tell you the look on that.
But there was this one Red Cross volunteer who had to be in his 70s coming out in the middle of the night to help a complete stranger. See, this man from the Red Cross.
After we moved back in, that man from the Red Cross stopped by to say hello. Said he just wanted to see how we were doing and if everything was okay.
But one of the Red Cross men talked to him and carried him on his back, and pretty soon Kevvy was just smiling and laughing and he felt safe again.
If you ever need the Red Cross, you can bet we'll be there.
He ran for Stanford University in the 30s. The three-term California senator is still running.
Hi.
Sounds good.
This time for President of the United States. Joining me now is Senator Alan Cranston. Senator Cranston, there is a poll out this morning that shows that you are coming in at the very tail end of the eight Democratic group pack here in the New Hampshire primary. If you do that poorly, fourth, fifth, or sixth, will you drop out of the race after the New Hampshire primary?
We've already deployed a good many of our troops to Maine, and we intend to go on to Maine to show what we can do in that state. I have a great deal of support there from the straw poll we wage, many volunteers ready to work for me on the issue of peace and jobs and the other issues I'm stressing.
Well, you can't deny that the electorate in the two states that you've been in so far has not really responded to your call that voting for you is a message on the nuclear freeze issue and on the arms control issue. Was your strategy wrong to so focus on that, or is this not an issue that the public really is as concerned about as you thought originally?
Well, first, you're judging the New Hampshire vote before the New Hampshire vote has occurred. Let's wait and see what happens here.
Fine. Let's talk about polls and generalities.
Polls often show things one way, and the elections come out another way. On the peace issue, the other candidates, you know, have come along very strongly on that issue. I've injected that issue into this campaign with great firmness. It's at the forefront of the campaign now. Originally, many people said nobody was particularly interested in peace, but all the other candidates have gotten on that issue very strongly. They followed in my wake on it. They've taken very strong positions, and that has, to some extent, diffused the peace vote. But I have a great deal of it. I believe that we can demonstrate that in New Hampshire. I know we can demonstrate that in Maine. For example, in Maine, there's the Beldam theory that some of the candidates have supported. That is not a way to achieve arms control. I'm strongly against that.
Okay, but you are the candidate that made arms control and the nuclear freeze the major focus.
Of the campaign.
Do you think that that is not the major concern of the American people now?
No, I believe the American people are concerned most about two issues: the economy, the work ethic, the need to have an opportunity for people who are concerned about their standing in society, their ability to take care of themselves, to have a job, and the ability of Americans so they work hard to make a good living. But they're very concerned about peace, and that's why all the other candidates have started stressing peace. Even Ronald Reagan came out with a peace speech after I had helped inject this so strongly into the campaign.
One of the issues surrounding your campaign is age. Even though you're younger than Ronald Reagan, there was a lot of talk that your age, or 69 years old, has hurt your candidacy. Do you think that's true? Has it been a problem for you?
No, I can't believe that the people of our country again want to go just for good looks. They were taken in by that in 1980. I don't think they're that pleased with it. I think they want experience. I have the experience. I know how to get things done. At the age of 69, I know why I'm running for president. I don't do things lightly. I think things through, and I'm running for president because we have a man in the White House that doesn't understand the peace issue,
doesn't understand the economic issues of our country, doesn't understand the environment. We need a leader with experience who knows how to get things done, and I think the people of this country will decide to go for someone with the wisdom that comes from experience.
Yeah, but your campaign talks about your baldness, your television ads do. It is a problem, an image, maybe sadly, and telegenic qualities seem to be more important than they ever have been in presidential campaigns. Don't you find that's true?
No, I don't think so. I think the people want proven capacity and leadership. And they certainly don't want old ideas, they want new ideas. I'm spelling out new ideas of how to end the arms race. Maybe Abraham Lincoln wouldn't have been elected president in the age of television. But the people listened to him. He harped strongly on one issue, the need to preserve the Union and check the spread of slavery. And eventually that got through. He became president. He preserved the Union, and slavery was over. We need a president who's going to end this arms race before it ends us. A president experienced with those issues, and I have that experience.
Despite what Gary Hart said here about how he's sure he can put together his organization in the states coming up, some of his people tell us that they are very nervous about the situation in the New York primary, where you are hinting that you might challenge his petitions to get on the ballot there. Tomorrow is the deadline for you to do that if you're going to. Are you going to challenge his names in the New York primary tomorrow?
No. We made tentative moves to challenge, but we feel that the candidates should all have their shot. He will have his shot in New York. I will have my shot here. I will have my shot in Maine and on to other contests.
And you will not drop out after Maine? Or is there a point at which you will say, okay, I'm going back to California to run for the Senate again?
Well, we take the campaign from week to week. Right now it's New Hampshire, but next week it's Maine, and we will see where we are. But I'm an optimist. I'm not a pessimist. And I'm looking forward to a surge of strength, not weakness.
Thank you, Senator Alan Cranston.